At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School. Sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, third hour? Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School, the new school way, coming at you live, 1040 O Street. Once again, we are brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese, Special Grades of Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, 85th and Andromat / Old Cheney, 168th and Maple up there in the O. A lot going on, obviously, with the game. Essentially, 3 days away for us here in Huskerland, and then obviously a little bit of NFL news. Receiver or players requesting trades, guys getting paid. Scary Terry McLaurin got paid. Trey Henderson got a little bit of a lot of a pay bump, essentially doubling his pay, going from $16 million to $30 million. And then more importantly, he gets to become a free agent one last time, most likely, if he has another year close to what he had last year, which is, you know, obviously leading the league in sacks and then did it the year before. So, a lot of guys getting some Quan. The only guy that's not is Michael Parsons. And we'll do a little bit of NFL stuff, but I really want to look at the eventually look at the depth chart and stuff like that. Obviously, Husker week, but you know, with Michael Parsons, it's a bigger issue. If you see, you know, over the weekend, Jerry Jones was on Michael Irvin's podcast, and for whatever reason, Jerry Jones is trying to negotiate like he's back in like 1930. Like,
almost 2030, dude.
But it's like, you know, yeah. And he said, you know, really, with one of the bigger reporters said that, okay, he said he negotiated like this with Dak Prescott and Zach Martin. But they were in there and probably knew a little bit more than Micah and said, okay, yeah, I want to be back. Never talk numbers. He got Micah discussed numbers. And then was like, all right, we got a deal. We'll work out the details later. That don't work like that. You know better than that. This is not back in 1960. And I don't know what the hang up is that you don't want to negotiate with his agent. There's 53 guys on that team. They all got an agent. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's thousands of guys in the league. They all got an agent. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Brian Schottenheimer has an agent. I'm sure the offensive coordinator has an agent. So you're thinking that you're going to, with your most high-profile and productive player on defense, you're going to say, all right, well, we're going to work this out and say, well, here's where Jerry Jones will run into a little bit of problem. He's done great for the league, no doubt about it.
The league is grateful for Jerry Jones and everything he's done.
He's done way more good than bad. What you go up here talking about, well, I got him for 3 more years, you know what that sounds like. And you got a history, period.
Do you ever?
And we know who Michael Parsons' agent is. Like, stop all the stuff. Either you want to sign the dude back or not. You're not getting any more press out of this. You already ran this thing into the ground. Mm-hmm. Okay, you don't want to pay him? Just say, you know, I ain't paying you this year. Period. All mm-hmm. right. Well, then figure out something else. And then Darrell Revis, you know, he had a pretty good thought that the NFLPA needs to step in. Because Jerry Jones pretty much told on all the owners, I know I can take advantage of you until I'm done with you. Mm-hmm. Essentially, he says, I can have you play this year. I know I can franchise you for two more years. And by that time, you'll be 2 years old, 3 years older. Value might not be where it is right now. And who knows what else. But yeah, you'd be highly compensated. You can't turn your nose up at those type that type of money, but you're not giving him what he's worth. Mm-hmm. So why all of a sudden you don't want to give him as what it's worth? Now, granted, I think eventually it'll happen. But there's some bad blood there, man. This isn't like Dak Prescott where you knew he was going to get paid.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because Micah Parsons is, with no disrespect to Zach Martin, probably the closest to the top of his position group in the NFL, certainly closer than Dak Prescott is. And again, I think Dak, when he's right, is a top 10 quarterback. Like, Dak can ball. Let's not kid ourselves about that. But Micah Parsons is closer to being the first best defensive player, first best edge rusher.
He's closer to T.J. Watt and Myles Garrett than
Dak Prescott is to any of the four quarterbacks at the top tier of the league.
Right. And you cost yourself money by waiting to pay Dak. You cost yourself money waiting to pay C.D. Lamb. You cost yourself money to pay Zach Martin. You cost yourself Zach Martin based on how you did business.
Mm-hmm.
He just got tired of it.
Yeah.
And you guys were garbage.
And you were bad.
So, I mean, I don't know, man. I like the drama, but it's like.
But when is it unnecessary?
It's probably unnecessary right now.
Right. I mean, you look at what Terry McLaurin did with the Commanders a little bit, right? Okay, sure, fine. You tried. You got what you wanted. Congratulations. Trey Hendrickson just got a one-year deal. He got a $14 million raise. Good for him. Was that so hard?
No.
Unnecessarily difficult. And then you have the Cowboys saga, which is another level to that. Hendrickson, sure, maybe more production than Micah Parsons. Led the league in sacks a couple times, like you said. I would still probably take Micah Parsons, right or wrong, in terms of overall value and versatility on the football field over Trey Hendrickson. And sure, Jerry Jones is well within his rights, according to the contract that they both agreed to and both signed, right? The rookie deal for Micah Parsons and whatnot, to continue to pay him what the contract says, no more. He's well within his rights to do that. And if he wants to, more power to him. Again, that's an enforceable deal. But how many other franchises make signing their best player this difficult? Very few, right? Sure, you can view it as, you gave up. You know, you look how weak you look by just giving in and acquiescing to your player's demands. Sure, maybe, but also it buys you goodwill. When you prove that you're willing to lock up your best players and give them, maybe not what they want, what they deserve, right, based on their value on the football field, I don't think that's a sign of weakness. I think that's the cost of doing business. And, you know, sure, maybe it feels like a penalty to have to pay guys early. But also, hey, guess what? You drafted a superstar. Congratulations. Now you get to pay him like one and keep him around because you should like having good players on your team.
Yeah, well, number one, if you paid him last year, you wouldn't be having to pay him what you're going to potentially have to pay him.
Close.
You know, moving forward. So you did it once. Twice, three times, and this is where you're trying to pay maximum dollars. Okay, let's look at Micah Parsons last year. Let's look at his stats. 12 sacks. That's kind of, I guess, a down year. So he comes right out of college, all right? Was a kind of do-it-all-everything. He was obviously a crazy athlete, right? I think he ran like a 4.3 or something, 240-some pounds. Okay, 13 sacks, three forced fumbles. Right out the get-go. All right, let's see if he has a sophomore slump. 13 and a half sacks. All right, let's see if you can do 3 years in a row. All right, I'm going to give you more production. 14 sacks. All right, last year in 13 games. Now in 13 games. Okay, 13 games. All the other games that are all other seasons, he didn't miss a game. So let you know he's durable.
Mm-hmm.
13 sacks. 12, excuse me.
So basically a sack a game.
Basically a sack a game.
Which is closer to one sack a game than any other year he's had so far.
So he
upped his level, arguably.
So, exactly. So he has 53 sacks, essentially, in 4 years. And you're sitting up here trying to, like, nickel and dime the dude? You're trying to, like, napkin deal the guy? Now, granted, you might not like that he has a podcast. You might not like you know, the tactic, you know, you might have to, you know, try to do your old school tactics. It's not going to work. It's not even worth doing it, like, with him. It doesn't make any sense, and it's not really, you know, good business sense. You don't really look, you know, you're not, like, recreating a way to negotiate.
No.
You having a player come to your office? Now, granted, there are players that get to go to the office. I always say this. Listen, when I had a complaint, I'd probably talk to the equipment guy about football stuff. When Thurman Thomas had a complaint, he went to Mr. Wilson's office or called him on his phone or his cell phone.
His personal.
Yeah. There is different levels to this. Michael Parsons is on that level. Mm-hmm. You got the best defensive player in recent history drafted that you drafted yourself, and he's holding out, trying to get his value. I think $21 million or whatever they're paying, that's a lot of money. It is. But T.J. Watt just got $45 million. Right?
41.
41. Okay, he's making double what he's mm-hmm. pretty much almost what Michael Parsons mm-hmm. is making.
For not double the production.
And not and this guy is right there. Mm-hmm. And you got to think, this production, while he was producing it, especially in the first 3 years of his 4 years of his career, or the first three of his 4 years career, DeMarcus Lawrence and company were bringing it as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you were just getting those and you were the only guy out there with a heartbeat and pulse.
Right.
And it's just interesting that the way it's going now. He's on there with Stephen A. Smith, and that's another avenue or tactic as well. Stephen A. Smith has a big following. He can touch a lot of people. He can influence people's thoughts. I don't think it worked.
Here's this too. So Bill Barnwell, ESPN writer, over the last 4 years, the Dallas Cowboys are the league's best defense with Micah Parsons on the field in terms of expected points added per play. Number one, if Micah Parsons is on the field, Dallas has performed on a per-snap basis like the number one defense in football for 4 years. Over the 1,040 plays that Micah Parsons is not on the field, they're the second worst defense in the NFL. Think about that. From one on a per-snap basis to 31. Because of one dude. Mm-hmm. That says something.
Well, it's no different than Emmitt Smith. He held out until they went 0-2.
Yeah.
He was the best running back in the league. And if you listen, if you watch the docuseries, Charles Haley almost hit Jerry Jones with a helmet. Now, he threw the helmet, didn't throw it at Jerry Jones. And then next thing you know, 2 days later, they signed Emmitt, 0-2. Maybe that's the point that he has to hold out. Maybe he has to be willing to, take a little bit of a haircut. But you hate for a player to have to lose millions of dollars to get the millions that he's earned. Yeah, people say, well, it's a contract. He has to play it out. Okay, mm-hmm. The people that say that are the same people that aren't going to say to the owners, they need to pay everybody's contract until the very end. So don't come at me and tell me that he has a contract. He outperformed the contract. Mm-hmm. Legitimately outperformed.
Yes.
This isn't...
For 3 years.
This isn't a guy... That's an average player that's at a position that everybody else is overpaying, mm-hmm. and then he's a byproduct of everybody else's success. That's how you get the collusion from the owners not to overpay these quarterbacks. It's mm-hmm. because a lot of average quarterbacks and below average quarterbacks have been getting paid like starters, and some people think Dallas Cowboys quarterback is one of them, period. When Dak was the highest paid quarterback in the league. Mm-hmm. How many times did you see guys get new deals and they were making a ton of more money than Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger at that time? Mm-hmm. And then, the Patriots and the Pittsburgh took care of them. Now, team friendly, but, made it respectable. This isn't a scrub.
No, the opposite of a scrub.
Don't tell me that you got one more year on your contract and then you need to pay it out. And then you need to, just play it out and to be happy with it. Then you don't understand football. You don't understand. There's no other guarantee besides the money that you get when you sign. Mm-hmm. Because they're telling you right now, once they're done using you, you're gone. This isn't hockey. This isn't baseball. This isn't basketball. So he needs to get his money. And matter of fact, he's earned it. Whatever you think about him being on a podcast, whatever you think about him, going to Penn State, whatever it is, your hang up with him, he hasn't gotten any off the field trouble, knock on wood. Seems like a pretty good dude. Seems like his teammates like him, and I know DeMarcus Lawrence would have liked to see him be more focused. Okay, that's mm-hmm. fine. I think a little bit of his lack of focus was not getting paid after those first 3 years. You could have re-upped with him before this. This is a guy that's outperformed his contract. You get mm-hmm. drafted in the contract that you get in the league on the hope and the assumption of what they see in your potential. Period. Some guys outperform it. Some guys underperform it. This guy's outperformed it. Pay that man.
It's just interesting, too, because if you're saying play out the contract, I would say you're living in fantasy land, too. Maybe that's the way business should be. Maybe. Should. Ideally. If everything was running perfectly. But that's not where we're at. If Jerry Jones thinks he is so powerful in terms of his force of will to be the one to take a stand against athletes holding out for more money before the end of their contract, if he thinks he's the one to stem that tide, more power to him, he can try. But even if he's successful, who's to say the other 31 owners are going to follow his lead? They probably would, right? It's Jerry Jones. He's powerful. He's got a lot of money. But I think there'd be a lot of organizations that say, you know what? Sure, we'll have to pay this guy more, but there are benefits down the line from just keeping him happy and keeping that production. And then you have to think about this too. Just because it happens in the NFL, would that affect basketball? Would that affect baseball? Would those owners say, no, Jerry got away with it. Jerry made Micah Parsons play for his fifth year before he got extended and got a new contract. No, it's not going to happen. If you say that's the ideal system, so be it. But Jerry Jones taking a stand is not going to change that. That's just factually not how business has been done. So you can hope and wish and dream that guys play out their contracts and are happy with it all you want. What the rest of the league and the rest of the leagues and players and agents have done is said, sorry, your ideal system isn't reality. We're going to operate this way. These are the facts on the ground. That's just not how it works anymore.
I'm just imagining and getting called to Jerry Jones' office and say, okay, we're going to go 5 years, $200 million. You good with that? Cool. We'll work out the details later. I mean, like how? Is it just flat? Is it fully guaranteed? Is it guaranteed only against injury?
Partial? Is there bonuses?
Right, is there bonuses? Is there workout bonuses? Mm-hmm. What is it? You're trying to tell
me. Are there snap, requirements?
Right. Is there any incentives?
Mm-hmm.
And John and Corlin has a good point. It got personal. But why? Okay, if Jerry Jones is trying to make a stand, why with your best player? What do you gain? You should make a stand out of somebody that really legitimately the guys in the locker room don't respect and don't think is very good.
Well, it should be the George Pickens. If George Pickens had asked for an extension earlier.
Right. Yeah, upon the trade, which usually happens.
Yeah.
But the guy that's been the most productive player that you've drafted in probably over a decade and has outplayed his contract.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it. Culligan Jay asks, he says, what did you mean by paying those contracts until the end? Is that something that does not happen in the NFL? No, it doesn't. They stop paying the contract. They can cut you. Even if you signed a contract. They'll even cut you when you're productive.
Because of money.
Because of your cap space or your cap number. Mm-hmm. Or they figure that they can, find a way to save. And that's their right to do that. It's interesting that... and that's where everybody thinks the contracts aren't guaranteed. Whereas where basketball is different. It'll never change because the basketball players are getting paid whether they're at home or on the court. Some of them are getting paid to go home, and they're honoring all those contracts. Now, they might be backed up by insurance, but you got a guy like Trey Hendrickson, right? He's in the last year of his contract, no different than you had Mike McCarthy in the last year of his contract, lame duck year. He knows he's going to be paid, in this case, $16 million. He wants a longer contract with the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to give him one. Well, then he's like, trade me. You don't want to trade him. So then the happy medium is go pay him $30 million when you could have probably done this in the offseason. And then with Michael Parsons, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, guys, the teams don't have to honor any contracts. A lot of them are funny money because – if you got a contract and you see a lot of times to really re-sign a player or in a trade, just say if it's 4 years, let's just do $20 million. Well, you get $6 million to sign, you make $1 million, or say you make $2 million, and then your base salary is $500,000 next year, the league minimum, or $750,000, right? So you're right at $8.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, was $11.5 million left? Well, then of that $11.5 million, you're supposed to make $5 million base the next year, $6.5 million, they're like, okay, well, the cap numbers ain't capping. Bye.
See ya. Yeah. Sorry, can't afford you anymore.
And this might be even after you do make a Pro Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
Made the Pro Bowl with Bengals. Bye. Now, they knew that sometimes you have to get rid of good players in order to sign Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins. That's just part of it. But this guy here needs to get paid. Terry McLaurin, same thing. Mm-hmm. He had to hold out all training camp to get a contract that they could have done all offseason.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what this $96 million up to 90, that's the max that it can go to.
Yeah.
So news is he's not getting $96
million. No.
Either they'll renegotiate with him or they'll cut him or trade him.
Well, that's not even top of the line deal.
No.
Not even close to wide receivers anymore.
Right. So now you get a 3-year deal. Now, like all these like reporters, like, oh, he's got a 3-year deal and $96 million, $32 million a year. You need to look at he got a $30 million sign-up bonus. Probably makes league minimums. That's $31 million. And there's probably some option bonus that will kick in the guarantee for next year. That third year, he gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it kind of works out with, Terry McLaurin, but he just incurred or some fines. You've been already fined $104,000 for missing mandatory three-day mini camp. He missed 4 days in training camp, total of $200,000. So he has to take a haircut of $300,000, essentially, 10% of his, or what is it? Is it 10%?
Yeah,
10%. Mm-hmm. To get where it's at when all that could have been eliminated. And he did the right thing by what the new thing is. Like, we'll do the stay-in.
Mm-hmm. I'll be here.
Yeah, it's like being in high school. We're going to do a sit-in.
I'm not chilling.
Yeah. And you just got your franchise quarterback's number one option. Now, this is your franchise quarterback's number one option. So, sure, he's happy. It was worth it. The team feels good about it because they got their player back, one of the leaders. Well, I think when the new ownership came in, he's one of the guys you asked to represent the team because they had the pitcher and they had the conversation with Magic Johnson and the new owner,
mm-hmm.
You turn around not paying him?
Really?
So,
Big Bird said 1%, not 10%.
1%, yeah. I thought so, right? Yeah. See, listen, you got to have
good. Either way, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, you got people in the right places in order to graduate Big Bird. But, that's the NFL, and it's always going to be the NFL will always be NFL. That's one thing that I think a lot of players need to understand. Everybody has dreams and aspirations. And this is why college football is probably the most appealing place to be until you're 30 years old, if you can, is because you get paid a lot of money and it's not based on production. And it's kind of funny money. You're not held to the same standard. Now you should be, but you're not because you didn't have to collective bargain. Yes, there's contracts, but you're still, there's a lot of guys out there stealing, but the numbers to make the NFL are still the same. But the one thing that you have to learn about the NFL versus I wouldn't say Texas Tech, but say you're at a school where everything, I'm trying to think Avery Johnson at Kansas State, since we talked about him.
Sure.
So his NIL deal is pretty dang good, right? And say they got a couple other players. Keeping him through some lean times is something that the program actually really needs. So they're making this decision based on the fear of the future. Mm-hmm. Whereas the NFL,
we'll find someone else.
We'll get eventually.
Yeah.
The owners are going to keep owning, mm-hmm. and the coaches are going to keep coaching. And the same thing with the coaches. They're always going to protect the shield and protect their pockets. And Michael Parsons is the last man standing. Or he's standing out.
He really is standing out.
Yeah. So you wish him the best. I'm pretty sure he's frustrated. But, the best thing he can do is just stay in shape mentally and physically. His chance to play. He's got, just continue to do what he's doing. It's not like he's got to go out there and recreate the wheel. So, anyways, we're going to take a quick break, come back. We'll talk about the Nebraska depth chart, what it means, any surprises. Obviously, everybody's talking about left tackle. Dana Holgorsen talked about the receivers. We'll look at some of those groups, but then also look at some of the linebackers because Coach Butler talked about who could potentially be, making the calls. Do they call it a green dot?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Put the green dot. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. We'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up? We're back. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. Now it's depth chart time. Austin?
Speaking of depth chart, real quick, John Bullock made the 53-man for the Bucks.
See, he is exactly who I thought he was.
All right, Nebraska.
Good on him, though. Straight up. Mm-hmm. Walk on. Kind of a hybrid. Special teams. Gets a chance here with Matt Rhule. Reshapes his body. Remember when he first came out as a linebacker? Homeboy was jacked. First of all, his dad is yoked up, too.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad's a tough dude, so I knew he was. And comes back. I think he decided to come back, you know, for his senior year. It's well worth it. I mean, you got to give him a ton of credit, man. I mean, he made himself into a player this year or last year. And besides Ty Robinson, in my opinion, now granted, I'm not in meetings and all that. I'm just going on what I see. He made some big plays. I mean, he won the game against essentially Purdue. He made huge plays. He was steady. He was tough, reliable. I knew right away that he was going to test well. I knew right away that he was going to do his thing on special teams. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy you want. Congrats on him, man. I'm happy for him. He's a good dude. He's a good kid. He's a good dude. I shouldn't call him a kid. He'd probably get mad about that.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, he's young. He's a little young buck. He got that new straight.
Jason Light, Husker connection.
Yeah.
There it goes.
But he made that connect.
Mm-hmm.
Now to the depth chart. What do you want to talk about? What are you more surprised at?
We talked about the three-way race at left tackle. I think that's interesting. I think I like the wide receiver slot position there. Two different body types in Ja'Cory Barney Jr. and Janarin Bonner. Two very different skill sets. You can mix up the looks there. And then the thing that stood out to me first, I think, was linebacker, Jay, with the law firm or Vincent Shavers Jr. listed at one spot, and then Javon Wright listed as a starter without an or at the other linebacker spot. When I went up and down kind of that list at that other linebacker spot, it was 6'5", 6'1", 6'3", compared to 5'11", 6'1". Do you think that's why, you know, Javon Wright is penciled in as a starter right now? Because whether it's law firm or Shavers, you got a taller, rangier, long linebacker to pair with a shorter one. Why do you think the linebacker depth chart shook out that way?
Well, I think, you know, with Jacob Bauer and Dawson Merritt obviously is a true freshman.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he doesn't have any experience, even though I think he's going to be a heck of a player, you know, here in the immediate and obviously in the near future as well. Jacob Bauer, obviously, you know, came all the way, I think, from California, earned a scholarship. Both of them don't have any experience. And then you got the law firm, and then you have Vincent Shavers that showed flashes. And so I think you got two of the same player there, and then you got Javon Wright, who's a guy that they know. Now, I think Javon's just been able to, you know, stay healthy, and it's none of his out of his control. And I think they have it under control. So the athletic ability and the ability to play multiple positions, I think you see it right there. So when you look at the linebacker position, you got to really depend on those top three, you know, Watson Trent, Vincent Shavers, and Javon Wright. Now everybody else got to step up, but those three guys got to really, you know, I always say carry the water up the slippery side of the hill and without spilling it. And, you know, it's a great opportunity. It's a senior year for Javon. It's a senior year for Watson Trent, who comes in with a ton of production. And now they got to go out there and produce. Now, the best thing, the big thing about linebacker is, especially when you have more experience than what I'm about to mention now, Javon, obviously been here for a while, but they all have, even though Watson Trent's been other places, they have more experience than Jalen George, Keona Davis for sure. Not as much as Judy, technically more than Van Poppel, or as much as Van Poppel.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go out there and expect perfection. You got to go out there and make it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to always talk about the time that I'd played with Seth Payne so much. I knew exactly what he was going to do. I knew exactly I knew everything about Seth. Seriously, what he did, what he ate, how he trained, how he was going to play things, how he worked out or how he warmed up, how I knew when he was going to play. I knew when I knew he was going to have a huge game based on who he was playing against. And it was against some really good centers at that time. Hmm. And we were freaking fracked. I took some in the chin for him. He did the same. When he got hurt, I used to call him Terrence T-Time Martin. Because the funny thing about Terrence Martin was we had a physical practice. He was getting into it with a guy. And Terrence used to be a Golden Gloves boxer.
Oh.
But he was about 6'4", 290 pounds. The funniest thing about it, he got into it with his offensive lineman. He took his helmet off, and then he was bobbing and weaving. You know what I'm saying? And that was his name during Golden Gloves boxing, Terrence T-Time Martin. Terrence didn't have any experience playing the nose in the 3-4. Mm. So I remember talking to Todd Grantham at the time. Funny story about him, by the way. And then obviously Reggie and Vic. And they were asking me about it. And they just came and said, well, you got to make them right. So I had to adjust my game until we adjusted to each other. Now, we eventually got there, but then it worked itself out. Then we brought in a guy named Steve Martin. We used to call him the House. And he played at Missouri. So Steve Martin was the funniest dude. So he was a big dude. And, you know, we'd come out to the defense, you know, defensive run out there, and he was like, let me get a house. You know what I mean? So we call him the House.
Nice.
Yeah. But it was right, funny because I was like, what? The House?
House.
Like, let's get a huddle. He's like, let's get a house. You know? And he had more experience. Been in the league about 8-9 years and ended up playing well. And so that's where, you know, this team, this defense is going to be successful or not is up the middle in those guys.
When you're on the field, would you rather play with a guy in front of you on the defensive line who's boom or bust? You know, it's a guy that can change a game on any given snap, but you might have to go make him perfect sometimes. Or would you rather have, you know, a bunch of Seth Paynes in front of you? Where, not saying he couldn't change a game in his own way, yeah, but more reliable, more steady, you know where he's going to be. He's going to be at the right place at the right time. Who is there a mix? Do you like one versus like the other?
I played with both. I didn't really mind it. I think as a younger player, like I'm playing with Ted Washington, I needed that. Mm-hmm. Now I played with Pat Williams in the early parts of his career, and he was boom or bust because he was learning how to be more of a technician. Mm-hmm. Now I was a little bit older player, so then I could, you know, I've been in the league a couple of years, so I could deal with that. Probably a little bit of both. I think right now it's just that you got to just figure it out together. I always say this: if you're going to make a mistake, make it 300 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. I'll figure it out from there. Mm-hmm. Because if you are, like I said, really intent and understand, and you always plan for every scenario, it doesn't catch you by surprise. And you're saying, well, I look at it like this. If two linemen are coming on me, you better make the play. Because chances are I'm on somebody's highlight tape. So you better. Because here's the thing. You ain't going to see me getting Peter rolled down the field because you're making the tackle in the backfield. Now, if you miss the dude in the backfield, guess what they're going to say? Look how they just smashed this linebacker into the ground. So I think that's really what it comes down to is guys that, you know, need to play. But I think when you look at this whole depth chart, you know, Nebraska might be one of the youngest teams in the Big Ten and definitely one of the youngest teams in the nation.
I think it was like 90 guys on the roster are sophomores or lesser.
Look at corner, right? Jeremiah Charles, Amari Sanders. Both of them essentially are sophomores. One's a redshirt.
Donovan Jones. Corner.
We saw him last year, right? Mm-hmm. Right? And Caleb Benning, redshirt freshman. This is letting you know the recruiting.
Rex Guthrie behind Deshaun Singleton, freshman.
Right from high school prom. I'm here. You know what I mean?
Hello.
Right? So Rex Guthrie. And then, you want to give a shout out to Derek Branch, right? Walked on and do it all. Provide some physicality and a little bit of you know what, and you know, he has I played with his dad, didn't play with his dad. His dad, I know his dad. Mm-hmm. His dad was before me. He's a tough cookie. So, you know, look at all these young guys. You got Dawson Merritt, right?
Look at the Jack position. You got a senior, Bliss is the starter, redshirt right. Freshman, sophomore.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of talent there. So you're able to kind of start to see some of these things that come to fruition. And so we'll see where it goes. Now let's flip to this other side. you know, the left tackle position, I think you feel comfortable there. I think Turner is all based on health, right? So if you just look at Elijah Pritchett and Gunnar Kulyi, you feel good there, right? Now, obviously, you expected Elijah to be number one. But, you know, Gunnar obviously is a must have. You know, he didn't look out of place last year. No. He did not at all. And then the right tackle, right? You got Tyler Kanak or Teddy Prochazka, or Teddy and Tyler. I think that's the two that really got to get off the bus with a different type of mentality. Because I think just assuming everything else stays the same and these are four solid guys from the right guard on over, right tackle, if they could get that plus out of there, that's when you really are able to do some things offensively and across the offensive line.
The fact they have the interior settled is probably for the best against Cincinnati and Dante Corleone. That's a big dude.
Yeah.
That's a game record. That is a heck of a player. But long term, I think there's a reason tackles are getting paid more than interior guys. They're going up against the best of the best on the outside. They're going to see a dude every week in the Big Ten, I'm sure from Cincinnati as well. Not probably the most comfortable spot for Nebraska to be, not having those tackle positions settled. They got 2 days to make a decision. Maybe it's a game time decision all the way up to Thursday. I would doubt it. But it, left tackle, you feel like it's the, I don't want to say safe option, but right, the guy you know in Gunnar Gatula from his fill-in last year. You have an X factor in Turner Corcoran, and you would think maybe the highest ceiling in Elijah Pritchett, but Matt Rhule talked in one of his press conferences. He said something to the effect of, well, you know, when you talk about Williams Nwarney, you talk about Elijah Pritchett, assuming that they have the most talent does a disservice to the guys in the room. But for Pritchett, Jay, it was about dependability, reliability, consistency. Matt Rhule said there were still a bunch of procedural stuffs going on, right? False starting, not always getting the right protection calls and sliding or moving the right way. That's stuff that you can't afford to have happen. That's what's held Nebraska back more than anything, is those self-inflicted mistakes. So even if Elijah Pritchett maybe does, you know, look the best of that group in terms of getting off the bus, if he's still false starting, if he still doesn't know which way to slide, that's a problem, and Nebraska can't afford to have that out there.
Yeah, it's you know, something that you know, you just got to continue to work on. Obviously, you know, Matt Rhule wants to, you know, really cut down on the penalties, because obviously he knows what was kind of a thorn in the side of Nebraska for years that preceded him. And so, you know, I think one of those things that, you know, it's got to be a group effort, you know, across the offensive line. Then obviously Elijah's got to really get a hold of it. And then obviously then just play, that'll allow him to be the player that they hope that he would be when he comes, and look at it as a challenge. There's always going to be challenges when you play, you know, the game of football. And there's good players here. You know, so people always think you go to the portal to solve the world's problems. You go to the portal to add to your team, then obviously get some, you know, potentially some quick fixes. But that doesn't mean you don't have good players here. And, you know, I think your comment about the inside part of it, of the line that's solidified, when you look at Cincinnati's defense, redshirt senior at the starting position. So they go in 315, 335, 275. Old dudes. They seen everything. So that's it. They play a three-man front. So they have they play a 3-4, now a little bit light in the tail as far as like the outside guys, and they have kind of a, it's actually like a 3-2-6 kind of defense, right? Because they have a position that's called the star position. So okay,
and that's been a linebacker in a lot of cases.
But he's like 5'10", 195.
Oh man, that's small,
right? In Antoine Peake Jr. is 6'1", 214. So, okay, that's kind of like a hybrid. All right, the Sam linebacker, 6'4", 240. Mike linebacker, which you got to take advantage of, 6'4", 240. Okay, Emmett Johnson's got to get big. Dead leg is on the horizon. Okay, and then their will, they have two guys. One's 5'11", 225, other is 6'2", 230. Okay, so it's kind of a 3-3-5. I'll give them that, right? So this is the same type of defense you see every day. So now, you know, as far as personnel-wise and guys that when you're trying to match up, but the interior guys got to have a good day. And they're trying to stop things up the middle with 240, 240, 315, 335, 270. That's just straight up. And then think of one of the other outside backers being able to, you know, set the edge. They're trying to stop the run. Mm-hmm. I mean, just by size alone. I mean, they're trying to stop the run. So it's good on good. We'll see where we're at. But the depth chart as far as Nebraska goes, you know, when you look at the wide receiver room, there's a lot of young guys there. So I think it's a commitment to their recruiting and developing their recruiting, but then also the guys that are the big name guys, Danke and all those guys, Hunter, they got to get off to a good start and they got to have a good year this year.
Dane Holgorsen said as much today. We know he thinks what Nebraska is going to get out of those top four guys. He said Key, Hunter, Barney, and Bonner, but he's excited to see what the young guys can bring as well.
It's a great opportunity, but then it's an opportunity for guys to really set forth the path of this team and you know, potentially, you know, do some great things. But in order to do that, you got to, you know, start off the season right against Cincinnati, who's going to be a tougher opponent than people give them credit for. They have nothing to lose.
Not a dang thing but the game.
And they've been preparing all year. Mm-hmm. And your coach is on the hot seat.
Woo!
And so we'll get into more. If I'm thinking about what players I need to eliminate, there's two that I think you need to do, and it's not the guys that you think of. We'll talk about that later in the week. We might get a little whiteboard Wednesday on Wednesday. See where we go from there. I'll talk about the things to look for from Cincinnati, or in my opinion. But we're going to take a quick break, put a bow on this bad boy. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. We'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. Quick segment until we turn over Ticket Weeknights, right? You guys, you
me
right?
And Tom Chattel. Mondays at 6 again. We're back.
Again. The party getting started. You know, we would never be able to have a week without another Scott Frost quote.
Oh, now I missed this one. Oh, boy.
He said something like his job is different because he ain't got people telling him what to do or who to play.
No, he did not.
I can't.
No, he did not.
He said something, man. I was like, you know, I can't even be mad at him, man. You know, at this point, my man just must have been miserable. He just been like, damn. Who else is coming to my
office? Get me back to sunny Orlando yesterday.
I ain't mad. You know, you got to do it. I get it, man.
Oh, my gosh.
You wish him the best, though. Get, you know, hope he's successful.
This job is different because I didn't have anybody telling me who to play.
It was something like that.
Isn't that your assistant coach's job?
I don't know, man. It was something. But I just laughed. Now I just get tickled to death. My man throwing. Hey,
what's he gonna make? What's he gonna bring up about Nebraska during his game against North Carolina? Because there's gonna be something.
I don't know. You know what? To be honest with you, you just wish him the best, man. It just didn't work out, man. It sucks.
It does.
It seemed like a match made in heaven. End up in hell, and he's, you know, he has fault. Nebraska has, I guess, fault, you know, is, I don't know whether it's the support or the, you know, whatever that didn't work out. It's not, you know, and it just sucks that it didn't work out. But it is funny, though. Did you pull the quote?
I did not pull the quote.
No.
Let's see.
I thought that's why you gave the sigh of relief.
No, that's a disappointed sigh that we still have to talk about this.
He will forever be connected to Nebraska.
Whether we like it or not, he likes it or not.
That's all right. And, I mean, look, the connection, you know, is real. He's from Nebraska, legendary family. You just wish him all the best.
Was it in today's press conference?
I think. Okay. Or maybe the last one, because it doesn't really matter. Either way, that's pretty much what he said.
I'll have to see if I can find
You know
find
what?
That.
Ask Tom Chattel. He knows.
I probably will have to. How about that?
Tom Chattel has to say about it. We are out of here. Jay Foreman, Austin Norman. We'll holler at you tomorrow.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.